Welcome to Gardening Talk back on 2NUR FM. Greg Richard here, joined. I don't know if we need to get a marching band in here or it's a rarity. Scott Sharp in the studio.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, roll the drums and all that sort of stuff. I don't know why, but
you get a marching band in? Well, it's rare you're in now.
It is a little bit rare. I still do the Friday mornings though with Todd. Always a lot of fun on Friday mornings around about 8 o'clock.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're not completely away?
No, I'm still here.
Your finger's still on the pulse.
I'm still here. It's been spirit somewhat.
Now, Scott, it's National Gardening Week.
It certainly is. Started yesterday, goes all the way to 19th of October. What a great idea. Get out in the garden. We're going to help people as much as possible today with the gardening problem so they can make the most of National Gardening Week.
And springtime, perfect time of year to get in the garden.
It certainly is.
And we've got Jenny from Warners Bay, and she's got a question about mirias, I believe.
Good afternoon, Jenny. How can we help you?
Hello, Scott. In early spring 2021, we planted what we thought was going to be a Maria hedge across the front of our property. We planted over 40. Now, they're struggling. We have lost nearly half of them. The remainder seem to struggle all the time. We've lost a random one here and there as well. Now, I thought they were pretty well foolproof, but clearly not. Have you any advice?
Yeah,
look, how I should treat this.
They really should be quite foolproof for you. Can you describe your soil conditions for me?
Okay, we're on clay.
Ooh, okay.
We prepared it in that we dug.
Mm-hmm.
We put in organics and we put compost in regularly and organic fertiliser. Yeah.
Yes. And what sort of fertiliser were you using?
It's a pelletised manure. Now, you're going to ask me, I can't remember
that's
the name
all right.
of it. One from the nursery.
That's all right.
General fertiliser.
And look, generally, would you say, though, because it's a clay area, were they, getting wet feet? Was there a lot of water running off and sitting around the plants?
Look, I wondered about that because of the major rain event we had in 21-22. I thought they may have had wet feet. That was just a guess. Up one end of the garden, they seem to be a bit better than down another end.
Mm-hmm.
And that end is a little higher. So whether it's draining from the top down to the bottom.
I suspect that's going to be the problem, that you have got that, you know, high clay soil, and effectively you've dug it out a bit, but it's still creating a little pond there for the plant. So if you've had a new plant and we do get a really large rain event and then just continual rain, you are going to, start to have that ponding and pooling in the bottom of the little well that you've dug essentially for the plant, and it can't suck it up. Look, the other thing is that clay is just, it's really the most terrible thing for plants. They just can't get their root system out into it. There's very little nutrient in there. You really need to be using a liquid gypsum if you can grab some of that, because it's a bit late now for actually digging gypsum into the soil. So you need to use some liquid gypsum.
I possibly could dig some gypsum in. We've grazed the garden bed that
yes.
they're in, and because they haven't done well, they haven't joined, so there is space between where we can dig the soil and dig in some gypsum.
Okay, well, look, I think that'd be worthwhile. The other thing to do is just to continue to get as much organic matter around the plants as possible. You actually want the worms there. The worms, of course, get in there and start doing their burrowing thing. They eat.
Interestingly, we have a lot of worms in our garden, in our clay soil.
Okay, that is very interesting, because usually, like, that's anathema to them. They don't want to be, anywhere near clay soil. So look, if you can just keep on trying to build that organic matter up, the worms are going to do, the earthworms are going to do the best job possible for you. And they're burrowing down, they're letting water drain away through where they've been burrowing. Of course, they've got stuff that comes out the back of them as well. And that just also helps. It just keeps on promoting it. I think the best bet for you is cow manure. Mirias do like a little bit of acidic soil. And if you've been using clay, if you've been planting in clay, then that might be slightly alkaline as well. So it might even be worth doing a little bit of a soil test for pH around the plants. And if it is, highly alkaline, then it's probably worth using some sulfur to try and get it back into an acidic sort of number around that, 6.5 to 7. That's what Morayas would typically like. So I think it's a bit of a, two-pronged approach here for you. Organic matter using cow manure and doing a pH test. And if you've got, highly alkaline soil, then using some sulfur to try and bring that down.
I'll certainly try that. Okay. Just a question too, the yellowing of the leaves, what's that a sign of?
Look, that's just generally an unhappy plant when it's Morayas, a tired, a hungry plant. So again, the organic matter, the manures are going to feed the plant, make it a lot healthier, and introduce the worms back into the soil, get them around the root system of the plant, and if you do have that incredibly alkaline soil, then you do need to temper that.
Okay. Well, I'll try that.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Very good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jenny.
Thanks, Jenny. We had just a quick question from Jeff from Charlestown. He wants to cut 1 or 2 feet off a large camellia. Just wants to know if that's all right.
Absolutely, Jeff. You can cut camellias right now. Look, just always be careful. They look a little bit bare. They sort of don't come back as quick as some other plants. But once they do start to spring back, they'll be very nice for you. If you're going to do it, I'd do it now, though, because if you wait another month or so, then we'll start getting too much heat and too much sunlight. And then those, really tender new shoots that they'll get will just burn off. So if you're going to give it a crack, do it very soon.
Do it now, just a little trim.
A little trim, yes. But you can go hard if you want to.
So we've got Leslie from Salamander Bay. She's got a question about, anthills.
Yeah, well, it sounds pretty impressive. Leslie, how can we help you?
No, it's not impressive at all.
It would be if they were like those giant anthills, in sort of deepest, darkest Africa. That'd be pretty impressive. But
They're not far off.
Okay.
Right.
They are huge, and they're growing in numbers like there's no tomorrow.
Yes.
And not only that, I have a couple of fairly big potted plants around the edge of the lawn, which is on a pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And they've destroyed the flowers that I've had in the pot. And, they're big, they're black. So are the ants, by the way. They're big black ones. I have a few that come inside near the kitchen window where the hibiscus is.
Yes.
Mate, I don't know. How can I win this war?
Look, the other danger with the ant as well is that they'll get into your pots and they'll create a nest there. And what happens then is that the water and moisture just drains straight down through the potting mix, and it becomes almost hydrophobic, the soil there. So your plants really start to struggle as well. Look, the best thing to do is you will need some sort of insecticide. When you go to your local garden centre, they will be able to sell you a fairly specific ant type poison, like an ant and insect poison. The best thing to do then is to mix it up in the watering can, drench that mixture down through your pots. And you can also go and drench any areas where you can see, ant activity and get rid of them that way.
Okey-doke.
Yep. But look, if it's, really out of control, it might be that you have to get a pest person to come out and do some more, full-on treatment. But I'd give it a try first. Going to your local garden centre, they'll be able to give you, a specific insecticide to use with ants and insects. Make up the drench and see how you go with that.
Thank you very much. I'll give that a bell.
Okay, but don't do, the stuff you see on, social media where they pour petrol down it and then light it and the whole backyard explodes. Don't go and do that. We don't want to see Salamander Bay sort of going up.
No, that would not be a good thing.
Certainly wouldn't be.
Thank you for your help.
Okay, thanks, Leslie. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You don't want the fire department around your house.
No, nor the bomb squad either.
And then having to say, oh, how'd this happen? Ants.
Too
many ants.
Yep. I saw them on social media.
We've got Emmanuel from Badal Bay. And good question about mandarins and oranges.
Emmanuel, how can we help you?
Oh, hello, Steve. Yes, I got an orange and mandarin.
Yes.
And I got that orange bug.
Yes.
And they're eating a lot of leaves and everything. Yesterday, I thought I'm going to start catch them.
Oh, yes.
And I think I got about 100 or more.
Yep.
But there is any chemical that I can spray?
Look, there used to be a chemical out there. It was actually called Confidor, and it was specifically for that, not available anymore. You really just need to go along to your local garden centre and get some sort of insecticide to try and deal with them, because they're a pretty tough little bug to get rid of. So I should be able to help you out with something to get rid of the bronze orange bug. The other old trick that I've heard is if you've got an old vacuum cleaner sitting around, because they'll make a brand, if you've got the sort of the new Butte, you know, vacuum cleaner, it'll make it smell, so don't do that. But if you have an old vacuum cleaner, you go out there and you actually just suck them with the old Hoover vacuum cleaner and get rid of them that way. That's the other way to do it. Otherwise, you do need to spray. You can use preventatives like Eco Oil, but they're really only a preventative. They won't kill the insect itself.
Yeah, and my fingers,
yes,
they are orange.
They will be orange. And look, the other thing you've got to watch out for, mate, is that that bad smell that they have, they'll spray that. And if that gets in your eye, I've heard tales that, like, it just burns uncontrollably. It's really, really nasty. So if you've got, just a pair of, you know, old glasses or some old sunglasses, I'd be putting those on, because, that's something you don't want to have happen to you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve. Okay.
Okay.
I do that. Thank you.
Okay, you have a good afternoon. Thank you.
Bye.
We've got Jo now from Valentine, and she's got a question about bluebell bulbs.
Yes, please, Scott. I planted some bluebell bulbs in a pot, a big pot. They have flowered, but the leaves are still green. Do I pull the bulbs out, or do I leave them in, as daffodils, you let the leaves die down, and then you can take them out? Or shall I just leave them in the pot?
The main thing is to not pull them out now. So when you've got the green leaves at this time, that's when it's feeding back into the bulb. It's a bit like when you're in the taxi or the hybrid car, and you see the schematic up on the dash, and it's showing power coming from the battery into the motor, into the wheels, and all that sort of thing. It's a little bit like that with the bulb. So it's stored all of that energy in its little battery bulb in underneath the ground, and then it goes up into the flower, and then the leaves come up, and then it sucks it back down into the bulb for next year, makes some new bulbs as well. So, just leave it there until those leaves die off for you. You can even feed them as well at the moment to promote that extra energy going back into the bulb. Mm-hmm. And look, you can leave them in the pot if you want to. There's certainly no harm in doing that. Look, the old-fashioned thing was to lift the bulb so you knew where they were. You put them into a paper bag and put them in a nice sort of airy spot in the garage or under the house or wherever. But look, in truth, I've just left bulbs in pots before, and they always come back next year.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much, Scott.
Not a problem at all. Have a nice afternoon, Joan.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM. If you've got a question, 4921 6216. And we've got Khadijah from Swansea. We've got a question about hibiscus.
Khadijah, how can we help you?
Oh, hi there. I was just wondering, what should I feed my hibiscus with? I have quite a few hibiscus, and they also, two of them look like quite unhealthy, sort of a bit gnarly, and maybe something's eating the leaves or...
There's hibiscus beetle. It just chomps through the leaves, puts little holes through them, makes them, like you said, really gnarly looking and a bit horrid. You've got a great place out there, Swansea. That's a sort of situation that hibiscus are going to thrive in, where you're getting some salt air and really great plant for the area. They do like cow manure. So give them a great big feed up with some cow manure. Be fairly liberal with it. It won't hurt them at all. And for instance, the ones that are looking a bit sort of scatty and gnarly, give them a prune back. They'll come back for you. Really tough plant.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much for that.
Okay. Not a problem at all. Have a nice afternoon.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Keith from North Lambton, and he's got a question about stink bugs.
Well, are you going to be able to help us out, Keith?
Well, I just sprayed, Scott, those... And good morning. Good afternoon. I just sprayed those orange ones, the smaller ones, and I've got this stuff, Insect and Mite. It's called Amgro, Insect and Mite. And I actually bought it from Sharp City Gardener. That's a little while ago now.
Okay, well...
getting down on my stocks of that, but one spray kills them. You know, I've got well over 100 killed, and it kills them like smoke, you know. Does a great job.
Look, you have to be careful, Keith. A lot of those insect and mite killers were sort of... outlawed, we'll just say it very quietly, and actually haven't been available for purchase for a couple of years at least now.
No.
Yeah. So,
I can't get the AMGRO insect and mite anymore?
I don't believe you can get the exact one you're talking about. There might be other ones that are called insect and mite, but they certainly won't have some of those nasty chemicals that were in there.
Well, you only spray them once on a quiet day, you know. So.
But look, I think you did hit upon an important thing with the bronze orange bug, and that's to get to them early before they sort of get their hard shell.
They come up like cicada type things from your ground.
Yes,
and then the next sort of tranche of them is the bigger stink bug. You know, it's a bigger creature. And again, you've got to keep an eye on your trees. They come up from the ground. If you're good, sometimes they'll sit round the bottom of the tree and wait to go up.
Mm.
You can knock them off then, but. You know, I've been battling with them for years and years. I've got mandarin trees and lemon trees. And, you know, that's what you've got to do. But this AMGRO stuff has been excellent. Oh, well.
Yeah. And look, those old ones, you know, there was always a withholding period on them where you couldn't eat the fruit if you've been spraying. Well, and it sort of gives an indication as to, you know, what might have been, you know, the active constituent in those chemicals.
There's no fruit on the trees for, you know, 6 months. So. Now, you know, you use this stuff and it's ideal. It kills them off and that limits the amount that you get, you know, in the rolling sort of thing.
Yeah, and look, I think if you are getting them in that nymph stage, you can probably use pyrethrum and just, you know, at least slow them down a bit and get rid of a few of them.
An insect spray. There's a particular one. It's the one that Bunnings sells. I can't remember the name of it. That works quite well too.
Okay.
But this stuff is really good. It's the old, you know, as I think I said to your mum once, you know, I've still got some stock of Roga 40.
Let's not mention that.
You know, that's the only thing that'll stop fruit fly.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these other, you know, things. But I only spray Roga when I really have to.
Yep.
And I've actually stopped even trying to grow some things because they're just too prone. But the smaller tomatoes, you know, I don't mind losing 20% of my crop. I really don't.
Mm.
But once you get over about 50%, you think, well, what's the use? And then I spray with Roga and that keeps them off.
Okay. Look, all I can say to that, Keith, is, you know, you'd be really careful of that. And
Well, you know, I mean, I've used this since I'm 70 tomorrow.
Yes.
I've used this since I was about 6 years old. I mean, that's what we did in those days, you know. But my parents were very clear about that. You know, you only spray on a still day.
Mm.
You don't spray when you're going to eat the stuff. All that sort of common sense stuff, you know. And I haven't got six fingers or anything, you know. It's just, you just got to be careful. And, my old AMGRO's going, eh? I'm sorry to hear that because it's been most effective.
And sometimes you get people,
that sold it to me. She said, oh, this is going out of stock. And I bought four or five bottles of it. And, there you go.
Oh, dear. It's almost like you've got the bottles of Grange maturing in the cellar there for you. So,
gently maturing.
Definitely don't be drinking it, though, okay?
Well, your mum gave me good advice on that and you know, when to do it and all that. And she was great.
Okay.
Okay, mate.
Thanks so much, Keith. Thanks for the call, mate.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
And Scott, do you want to take a little bit of a look at agapanthus this afternoon?
Yes, they're getting ready to come out in flower.
All right, okay.
Yes,
so we've got to start getting ready for them somehow?
Well, I was talking to a radio announcer here at the station who might be coming on later on this afternoon, and he was saying about how his agapanthus are doing the flowering thing already. It's probably just a little bit early, but he said he's come up early. He must have a particular variety.
Mm.
I then said, what are the kids around the neighbourhood coming in with the sticks and, you know, taking the heads off, which is, you know, the usual practice, unfortunately. Shouldn't do that because they are a lovely flower.
Yep.
So, look, as we get into the really hot months around December and January, that's when they generally come out in flower, end of November sometimes. But a great tough plant just to fill up a space to use as a border as well. So you just plant them. You can, you know, after a year or so, you can dig them and split them and sort of start again.
Yep.
You can get them in white. You can get them in those beautiful blue colours. You can also get, you know, dwarf ones as well that only get to about, oh, here's my fingers working again.
Oh, yeah. I'd say a ruler size, 30 centimetres.
20 to 30 centimetres. It only gets a smaller flower head on it, but more, I guess, colour variety in those smaller ones. You can get actual pinks, sort of blushing white pinks in those agapanthus. They love a bit of cow manure. They don't need lots and lots of water, only just to get them established over the first, 3 to 4 weeks.
Yep.
After that, they just look after themselves. You can split them, like I said. And at this time of year, apparently, thanks, Kev, for the pointer, they're flowering nice and early. And look, I'm sure he's the best gardener in the world.
Maybe he's got like a special potion or something for them that he pours over the top.
He probably has. He took his glove off and there was a green thumb sitting in underneath.
Oh, right.
Yes, he's never showed me that before. A bit like a Blofeld gardener sort of person. his glove came off and there he was, some sort of... plant agapanthus secret agent.
Sort of a gardening supervillain.
Yes.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM. Got time for a couple more calls, and we've got Colin from Belmont, and he might have an idea for getting rid of stink bugs with a non-chemical solution.
Ooh, sounds like a good idea. Colin, how can you help us?
Good afternoon. Sorry, I've got a beeping. I hope I'm not too noisy. I'm in the shopping centre.
No, you're right.
All
crystal clear.
Okay, what I do is I use a vacuum cleaner, but I use a leg of a pantyhose.
Yes.
Stick it down the vacuum cleaner and then tape the top so it doesn't get sucked into the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, very good.
And the other thing which I've noticed over many years is that the stink bugs come down the tree on a hot day.
Yes, they will do that. They really don't like the sun at all and the heat. They are quite clever because even if you walk up to the tree, they'll see you and they'll go around the other side of the leaf or the other side of the trunk. They're quite clever like that, the little things.
Yeah. But if you have the vacuum cleaner set up before you go near there, and when you go out in the real heat of the day, long sleeve shirt, eyeglasses,
yes,
gloves, and you attack them, I've been able to do that, basically eliminate them. Then when I take it out, I tie up the top of the vacuum cleaner, the stocking, and drop it into a bucket of hot water.
Yep.
So I'm not using any of those nasty chemicals.
Yes, yes.
And I found it very effective doing it that way in the heat of the day.
Excellent, because
gets rid of the old ones, which are so hard to get hold of.
Yeah, and they've got their hard shell. They're like a Galapagos tortoise, aren't they? It's like their shell's that old and gnarly. So very good. I've been recommending the Hoover method for years now. So thanks for calling in, Colin, and telling us that it's working for you. Perfect.
Yeah, the stockings protect the vacuum cleaner from getting damaged.
Yes, okay. So you can use your brand new, we won't mention the brand, but can use your brand new vac in that case.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much, Colin, for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. Bye.
Well, if you've just got one vacuum cleaner, you'd probably be a bit hesitant.
I think so. That's why you need to, scour the throwouts or whatever, or, the Facebook marketplace thing and see what you can find there.
So you just need a workable vacuum cleaner.
It doesn't have to be special. Yeah, it's not like you need one of those robo-vacs that go around. We should invent this. We've just come up with a great idea, haven't we? We've got this tree-climbing vacuum that goes up
trees and sucks all the bugs off.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, patent it.
That's ours. Yeah. No one steal that.
We're off to the patent office after the show. Let's go.
We've got Diana now from Balcolin, and she's got shrubs beside a pool.
Actually, Scott, I just wanted to ask you a question.
Yes.
My son lives in Brisbane, in southern Brisbane, in Thornside, and he's got a pool, and he doesn't really like gardening. So when I go up there, I like to do a bit of gardening. And he's got an empty box, a flower box, right the length of his pool.
Yes.
That's been built there, and I want to fill it with plants because it's so bare and you just see the fence. And I wondered, it gets the full sun and it's bloody hot up there.
It certainly is. It's humid too, and that's a fantastic thing up there. So lots and lots of different things will grow that won't grow down here.
I was wondering, like, what plants should I buy? Like, when you said agapanthus, that's what pricked my ears, and I thought, can I have them? Because they don't need much watering, because they're not very good at watering. But I was thinking rosemary. But what else do you suggest?
Yeah, look, I think rosemary might suffer in the humidity up there a little bit. Even if you wanted a plant that wasn't going to grow, you know, very big, you could use crotons. There's all sorts of varieties of crotons, and you get lovely different colours in the crotons, and they will survive in the full sun up there in the humidity, you know, once you get north of Coffs Harbour. There's other plants like a calophus, which you can get those in greens and reds, very prunable.
What's the name of that one?
A calipher, A-C-A-L-P-H-Y-A. And they are a fantastic plant, very prunable. And again, lots of colour next to the pool, won't make a big mess for you. And they'll be much more readily available up there than they are down here in the colder, because they just don't do as well down here. So there's a couple for you. There's a calipher and crotons.
Is a pig face good too?
Yes, pig face is excellent, but again, it won't get very tall, though. It's more of a ground cover than anything.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, thank you so much. So I could at least get some plants and take them up to him anyway. Thank you.
Okay, but you might be best getting those up there. I think they'll be more available up around those warmer climates.
All right. Okay. Thanks again, Scott.
Okay. Thanks so much, Diana.
Bye.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM. Scott Sharp, only a couple of seconds left, so... Nearly out of time for another week.
We certainly are. I can sprout on about other things if you need me to, but...
I don't think there's any. We can catch up again in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, I'd love to do that.
Judy Sharp back with us next week?
I believe so.
Excellent. Scott Sharp, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.